Osho. Seeds of Revolution, my most loved gospel on Jesus. Commentaries on the fifth gospel of St. Thomas. Discourse number 10. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
Bhagwan, Jesus said, it is impossible for a man to mount two horses and stretch two bows, and it is impossible for a servant to serve two masters, otherwise he will honor the one and offend the other.
Everybody is already mounted on two horses. Everybody is stretching two bows, not only two, but many. That's how envy is created. That's how you are constantly in anxiety. Anxiety shows that somehow you are mounted on two horses. How can you be at ease? Impossible. Because the two horses are moving in two directions. And you cannot move anywhere. With one horse, movement is possible. You can reach somewhere. With two horses, movement is impossible. They will negate each other and you will not reach anywhere. And this is the anxiety, that you are not reaching anywhere. Deep down, this is the anguish, that life is slipping out of the hand. Time is becoming less and less. Death is coming near. And you are not reaching anywhere, as if you have become a stagnant pool, just getting drier and drier and dying. No goal, no fulfillment. But why it is happening? Because you have been trying to do the impossible. Try to understand the mind as it functions in you. Then you will be able to understand what Jesus means. You want to be as free as a poor man. Because only a poor man can be free. Because he has no burden. Because he has nothing to protect. Because you cannot rob him. He is unafraid. You cannot snatch anything from him because he has nothing. With nothing, he is at ease. With nothing as his possession, nothing can be stolen from him. Nobody is his enemy. Because he is not a competitor at all. He is not competing with anybody. You want to be as free as a poor man, as a beggar. But you also want to be as secure as a rich man. As safe as an emperor. The rich man is safe. the rich man is in security. He feels more rooted. Outwardly, he has made all the arrangements. He is not vulnerable. Against death, he has protections. You cannot murder him so easily. He has an armor. And you would like to be free like the beggar and to be secured like an emperor. Then you are mounting on two horses. And it is impossible to reach anywhere. You love a person, but you want that the person should behave like a thing, completely in your hands. But you cannot love a thing, because the thing is dead and cannot respond to you. So if the other is really a person, he cannot be possessed. He is like mercury. The more you try to keep him in your fist, the more he goes out. Because to be a person means to be free. If he is a person, you cannot possess him. If you can possess him, he is no more a person and you will not be able to love him. Then he is just a dead thing. Who can love a dead thing? You are mounting on two horses. You want a person like a thing, which is impossible. A person has to be free and alive, and only then you can love. But then you feel difficult. You start possessing. Then you start killing him. You are poisoning. If he allows you this poisoning, sooner or later he will be just a thing. So wives become decorative pieces in the houses. Husbands become just watchmen. But love disappears. And this is happening in all the directions. There is doubt in you, because doubt has its benefits. It gives you more calculating power. It gives you more protection. Nobody can deceive you easily. So you doubt, but then doubt creates anxiety, because deep down you are uneasy. Doubt is just like illness. Unless you have trust, you cannot be at ease, because doubt means wavering, and wavering is uneasy. Doubt means what to do, this or that. Doubt means to be or not to be. And it is impossible to decide. Not even on a single point decision is possible through doubt. At the most, you can decide with the part of the mind which becomes the majority. But the minority is there, and it is not a small minority. And against the minority you have chosen, the minority will be for always looking for the situation when it can say you have chosen wrong. And the minority is there to rebel. It is a constant turmoil within you. With doubt there is uneasiness. It is an illness. It is just like any illness. It is a mental illness. So a man who doubts becomes more and more ill. But you cannot deceive him easily. He is more cunning. He is more clever in the ways of the world. You cannot deceive him, but he is ill. So there is a benefit. He cannot be deceived. But there is a loss, a great loss. The benefit is at a very great cost. He remains wavering, uneasy. He cannot decide. Even if he decides, the decision is just a major portion deciding against the minor. He is divided. There is always conflict. Trust you also want. You also want to be in faith, because faith gives you a health. There is no indecisiveness. You are completely certain. Certainty gives you a happiness. There is no wavering. You are unwavering. You are whole, not divided. And wholeness is health. Trust gives you health, but then you become vulnerable. Anybody can deceive you. If you trust, you are in danger. Because there are people are around who would like to exploit you. And they can exploit only when you trust. If you doubt, they cannot exploit. So on two horses, doubt and faith, you are mounting. But you are doing the impossible. You will remain constantly in anxiety and anguish. You will deteriorate. In this conflict of the two horses, you will die. Someday or other, there is going to be accident. That accident will be your death. You are finished before you have reached anywhere. You are finished before the flowers came. You are finished before you came to know what life was, what it means to be. The being has disappeared. Jesus says, it is impossible for a man to mount two horses. But every man is trying to do the impossible. That's why every man is in trouble. And I say this is in every direction. So not only two horses, there are millions of horses altogether. And every moment you are doing a contradiction. Why it happens? The mechanism has to be understood. Only then you can drop it. Why it happens? The way every child is brought up is the cause. The way every child enters into this world of mad people all around is the cause. They create contradictions. They teach you contradictory things. For example, you have been taught that love holds humanity. Be brotherly to each and everyone. Love thy neighbor as thyself. And simultaneously you have been educated, brought up, conditioned to compete it. To compete with everyone. When you compete, the other is the enemy, not the friend. He has to be defeated. He has to be won over. He has to be really destroyed. And you have to be ruthless. Otherwise, the other will destroy you. If you are a competitor, then the whole society is the enemy. Nobody is a neighbor. Nobody is a brother. And you cannot love. You have to hate. You have to be jealous. You have to be angry. And you have to be ready continuously to fight and win. And it is a hard struggle. If you are tender-hearted, you are lost. So be strong and violent and aggressive. before the other attacks you attack him. Before it is too late, you attack and win. Otherwise you will be lost, because millions are competing for the same thing. You are not alone. And how a mind who is in competition can be in love with the neighbor? It is impossible. But both teachings have been given. You have been taught that honesty is the best policy, and also that business is business. Both the things together, both the horses have been given to you together. And a child, unaware of the ways of the world, cannot see and feel the contradiction. To feel the contradiction, very mature intelligence is needed. A Jesus, a Buddha is needed to feel the contradiction. A child is unaware of the ways, and the teachers are persons he loves, the father, the mother, the family. He loves. How can he think that they are creating contradictions in him? He cannot even imagine, because they are the benefactors. They are kind to him. They are bringing him up. They are the source of energy, life, everything. So why they should create contradictions? A father loves, a mother loves. But the problem is that they were also brought up in the same wrong way. And they don't know what to do except to repeat. Whatsoever their parents taught them, they are teaching their children. They are simply transferring a disease from one generation to another. The disease is being transferred. You may call it the treasure, the tradition, but it is a disease. It is a disease because no one becomes healthy through it. The whole society goes more and more neurotic. And a child is so simple, so innocent, he can be conditioned into contradictory ways. By the time he realizes the contradiction, it is too late. And it happens that almost the whole life is lost, and you never realize that you are mounting on two horses. You think this contradiction and try to find it in your life, you will find millions of contradictions there. You are a confusion, a mess, a chaos. When people come to me and they ask for silence, I look at them and I feel very much, because it is almost impossible. Because silence can exist only when all the contradictions have been dropped. It needs arduous effort, very penetrating intelligence, understanding, maturity. Nothing is there. And you think just by repeating a mantra, you will become silent? If it was so easy, then everybody would have become silent. Just by repeating Ram, Ram, you will become silent. Riding on millions of horses, repeating the mantra, you will become silent. That mantra will be again one more horse. That's all. More confusion will come out of it. One more horse is added. You will be more confused through it. Hence, look at that so-called religious man. He is more confused than the worldly, because new horses has been added. The man who lives in the market, the world of the market is less confused. Because at least he may be having many horses, but they all belong to this world. At least one thing is same, similar. They all belong to this world. And this religious man, he has all those horses, those who belong to this world, and he has added some new horses which don't belong to this world. He has created a greater gift, the other world, God, the kingdom of God. And he continues to move in this world. He becomes more confused. More conflict arises in his being. He is rendered apart. He is not together. Every fragment is falling apart. All his togetherness is gone. This is what neurosis is. The way you are brought up is wrong. But nothing can be done now because you are already brought up. You cannot move back. So you have to understand it and drop it through understanding. If you drop it because I say, then you will add more horses. If you drop it through understanding because you understand the whole thing and hence it is dropped, then no more horses will be added. On the contrary, old horses will be released to their freedom so they can move and reach to their goals, and you can move and reach to your own goal. Because not only you are in difficulty, your horses also are in very much difficulty because of you. They also cannot reach anywhere. Have pity on you and on your horses, both. But this should be done through understanding, your understanding, not my teaching, or Jesus, or Buddha. They can show the path. But if you follow without understanding, you will never reach the goal. Now try to understand. Jesus said, it is impossible for a man to mount two horses and stretch two bows. And it is impossible for a servant to serve two masters. Otherwise, he will honor the one and offend the other. Why it is impossible? And what is impossibility? Impossibility is not something which is very difficult. No. Howsoever a thing may be difficult, it is not impossible. You can achieve it. By impossibility is mean which cannot be achieved whatsoever you do. There is no way, no possibility to do it. When Jesus says impossible, he means impossible. He doesn't mean very difficult. Then only you will be undone through it. It cannot be done. But what will happen to you who has been making an effort to do the impossible? You will fall apart. It is not possible to do it, but doing it, you are undoing your own life. This will happen. This has happened. Look at people. If doubt is there, have you seen a man who has doubt and who has not faith? If you have seen a man who has only doubt, he cannot live. It is impossible to live. Go to the madhouses, there you will find people who have doubt about everything. Then they cannot even move. Because they doubt even a simple simple action. I have known a man who was so doubtful that he could not go to the market, and the market was just few yards away. He will come again and again to check the lock. And when we were children, we used to play tricks on that poor man. He will be going and we will ask him, "Have you checked the lock?" He will be angry, but he will go back to check it. When he was alone, there was nobody else, and so afraid. He will be taking his bath in the river and somebody will say, "Have you checked the lock?" He will be very angry, but half his bath finished, immediately he will come out, run to the house to check. This is the perfect skeptic. If doubt goes too much, you will enter into a madhouse, because then everything you doubt. This is one type of man who is completely broken into fragments. If you choose faith against this, you will become absolutely blind. Then anybody can take you anywhere. Then you have no intelligence of your own, no alertness of your own. Around Hitler's, this type of people are there, you will find. They have trusted, and through trust they have lost. Because of this, you are trying the impossible, to have a compromise, not to go to this extreme, because there neurosis comes, not to go to the other extreme, because blindness happens. Then what to do? Then simple reasoning says, just compromise both, half and half. A little doubt, a little faith, but then you mount on two horses. Is it not possible to live without doubt and without faith? It is possible. In fact, that is the only possibility to grow, to live without doubt and without faith. Just to live simply, spontaneously with awareness. And this is really what trust is. Not trusting somebody else, this is trusting life. Wheresoever it leads, without doubt, without faith, you simply move. You move innocently. A man who doubts cannot move innocently. Before he moves, he will think. And sometimes he will think so much that the opportunity is lost. That's why thinkers never do much. They cannot do. They become simply cerebral, because before action they must decide. They must come to a conclusion, and they cannot come to a conclusion. So how to act? Then it is better not to act and wait, but life will not wait for you. Or you become faithful, believing, a blind man. Then anybody, any politician, any madman, any pope, any priest can lead you anywhere. And they are themselves blind. And when blinds lead blind, there is bound to be catastrophe. What to do? The reasoning says, ordinary reasoning says, make a compromise. One scientist, B.F. Skinner, was making an experiment. worth to be reminded. A white mouse was the object of experiment. The white mouse was starved for 2-3 days, so he was very hungry. Really, just hunger, ready to jump and eat anything available. And the white mouse was put on a platform. And just below the platform, there were 2 boxes, similar, the same color, same size. And both the boxes contain food. He can jump in either the right box or the left. The rat immediately jumped, not even a single moment of thought. But whenever he will jump into the right box, he will get an electric shock, and there was a trap door, so he will fall inside another box through the trap hole and will not be able to reach to the foot. Whenever he will jump into the left, there was no shock and there was no trap door, he will reach to the foot. Within 2-3 days, he learned the trick. He will jump in the left box and avoid the right. Then Skinner changed. He changed the places of the boxes. He jumped into the right box and found that there is electric shock. Now he was disturbed, confused, what to do or what not to do. So before jumping, he will tremble, waver, doubtful. And this is how a philosopher is. A white mouse, trembling, doubtful, what to do, left or right, and how to choose, and who knows. But then he got accustomed again. Then Skinner changed again. He became so confused that he was hungry, but he will wait, trembling, looking to this box and that, and how to decide. Then he decided the thing you have decided. He jumped between the 2 boxes. But there is no food. This is not going to help. And after a few weeks of experiment, the white mouse became mad, neurotic. This is what is happening to you. You have become confused what to do, what not to do. And the only thing that comes to the mind is that if it is difficult to choose this, difficult to choose that, then it is better to have a compromise. Just jump in the middle. But there is no foot. Of course there is no electric shock, but there is no foot also. You miss a life if you jump in the middle. If it was possible for the white mouse to mount both the boxes, he would have done that. These are the 2 possibilities which open for reasoning. Mount both the horses or just jump in the middle. Intelligence, very penetrating and keen intelligence is needed to understand. To understand the problem. There is no other solution. I'm not going to give you any solution. No, Jesus has given any solution to anybody. Just the understanding of the problem is the solution. You understand the problem and the problem disappears. Is it not possible to live without faith and without doubt? neither making a compromise, because the compromise is going to be a poison. They are so contraries, your whole life will become a contradiction. And if contradiction is there, you will be divided, split. Schizophrenia will be the final result. Or if you choose one and deny the other, then the benefits that were possible from the one are denied to you. Doubt gives you protection against exploitation. Faith gives you certainty. Drop one, and the benefit of that is also dropped. If you choose both, you mount on two horses. If you make a compromise, you create a division within your being. You are two. You become a crowd. Then what to do? Just understand the problem and get down from both the horses. Don't make any compromise. Then a totally different sort of being, a totally different quality to your consciousness happens. But why you are not doing that? Because that quality needs alertness. That quality needs awareness. Then you need not doubt anybody. You have simply to be fully alert. Your alertness will be the protection against exploitation. If a fully alert man looks at you, you cannot deceive him. His very look will disarm you. And if he allows exploitation, it is not because you are cunning and cheating him, but because he is kind and allows you. But you cannot cheat a fully alert man. It is impossible. Because he looks through you, you are transparent. He has such consciousness, you are transparent. If he allows you to cheat him, it is because of his compassion. You cannot cheat him. This consciousness seems to be difficult. That's why you have chosen the impossible. But the impossible is impossible. You are only in a make-believe that it can happen. It has never happened. It will never happen. You have chosen the impossible because it looks easier. Compromise always looks easier. Whenever you are in a difficulty, you compromise. But compromise never helps anybody. Because compromise means two contraries will exist within you. And they will be always in a tension. And they will divide you. And the divided man can never be happy. This is what Jesus means, but Christians have misunderstood him. Christians have completely missed Jesus. Because again your mind goes on interpreting. What they have interpreted, they think Jesus is saying that choose one horse. Either this world or that. Choose one. Don't mount on two horses, because you will be in difficulty and it is impossible. So choose one horse. That's what they have come to conclude and interpret. I have heard it happened. One night, Mullah Nasruddin's wife was in search of a midnight. She was feeling hungry. So she was in search of a midnight snack, but she couldn't find anything. just a dark biscuit. So tentatively she tasted it, found it good, tasted good, so she ate, and she liked it so much that in the morning she said to Nasruddin that place a big supply. Nasruddin went and purchased a lot of dark biscuits. The local grocer said, "What are you doing? Because I know your dark is so small, you don't need such a large supply." Nasruddin said, "It is not for the dark, it is for my wife." The grocer said, "I must remind you that these biscuits are strictly for dogs, and if your wife eats them, she will be dead. They are poisonous." And after 6 months, the wife died. And then Nasruddin conceded to the grocer. One day he said, "My wife is dead." The grocer said, "I told you before that those biscuits will kill your wife." Nasruddin said, "Those biscuits have not killed her. It is chasing behind the cars, not the biscuits." Your mind sticks to its own conclusions, because one conclusion lasts, the confidence is last. So whatsoever the situation, you stick to your conclusions. That gives you a ground for your ego and your mind to stand. One day Mullah Nasruddin was walking with a very big stick which was too long for him. One friend suggested, "Nasruddin, why don't you cut from the bottom few inches off?" Nasruddin said, "That would not help, because it is this end that is long." Your reasoning can be suicidal. It is. You think it is reasoning. It is not reasoning. It is just deceiving. Deceiving yourself. But you don't want to lose ground. You want to be confident. And all confidence that comes through mind is false, because mind cannot give you confidence. It can give you only false things. It can supply you only false things. It has not got the real thing with it. It is just a shadow. Mind is just thoughts, shadows. Nothing substantial in it. But it can go on playing rationalizations. And you will feel good. Christians missed the whole point. They thought Jesus is saying, "Choose." Jesus can never say choose. Jesus means choicelessness. Because if you choose, the chooser mind is strengthened, not destroyed. The mind which is choosing becomes stronger through the choice. No, it is not a question of choice. And through choice you can never be total. Because you have to deny something. If you choose faith, you will have to deny doubt. Where this doubt will go? It is not something outwardly you can throw it. It is deep in you. Where it will go? You can simply close your eyes, that's all. You can repress it in the unconscious, that's all. But it is there, like a worm eating your consciousness. It will be there, and someday or other it will come to the surface. What can you do? How can you drop? If you choose doubt, where your faith will go? It is part of you. So compromise will happen. You will become an amalgam of many things, somehow put together. Not a synthesis, but a compromise. Jesus means quite the contrary. He means don't choose. It is impossible for a man to mount two horses and stretch two bows, and it is impossible for a servant to serve two masters. Otherwise he will honor the one and offend the other. Look at the last sentence. Otherwise he will honor the one and offend the other. If you choose one, you honor the one and offend the other. And the offended part of you will take revenge. It will become rebellious. It happens. Science depends on doubt, totally on doubt. No trust is allowed. So have you known, have you observed scientists? Out of their lab, they are very faithful. You cannot find more trusting people than scientists, more easily to be cheated than anybody else, because their doubt part functions in the lab and their trust part functions outside. And they are simple people as far as the outside world is concerned. In their lab they are very cunning and clever. You can cheat a scientist very easily. It is not so easy to teach so-called religious men. In the temple they are in deep trust. Outside the temple they are very cunning. Look at the so-called religious people. Outside the temple you cannot cheat them. And inside the temple there is no possibility to cheat, to cheat or to exploit. Inside the temple they are very simple. They use their trust part there, their doubt part in the world. They are good businessmen. They accumulate wealth. They exploit the whole world. A scientist can never be a good businessman. He cannot be a good politician. That's not possible, because doubt part is finished in the laboratory. Outside, the trust part functions. A scientist at home is totally different than a scientist in his scientific research work. You may have heard many stories about their absent-mindedness. They happen, really happen. They are not stories. Because he uses his attention in the lab, then outside the lab he becomes inattentive. He has used one part, it is finished. So he has a double life. In the lab he is very mindful. Outside the lab he becomes absent-minded. It is said about Albert Einstein, he was visiting a friend. They took their dinner. They gossiped about this and that. And there was not much, because Einstein was not a man of gossips. And he was not very talkative also. So the friend started feeling bored. And it was getting darker and darker. It was 11 o'clock in the night. And he wanted now Einstein to leave. But it was impolite to say so with such a great man. So he waited and waited. Sometimes he even gave hints. He said, the night is very dark. And he said, it seems it is now about 11:30. But Einstein will look and yawn, and he wanted to sleep. Then it was almost 12, and the friend said, I think you are feeling sleepy because you are yawning. That was the final hint. Einstein says, yes, I am feeling very sleepy, but I am waiting when you go, then I can go to sleep. The man said, what are you saying? You are at my home. Einstein stood up and said, sorry, because I was continuously thinking, when this man goes, so I can go to sleep. This man in the lab is perfect as far as his attention is concerned, presence is concerned, but that part is used. Outside the lab, he is totally a different man. Just the opposite. That's why it happens, so-called religious people, you find a contradiction in their life. It is natural. In the temple, see them pray and see their faces. They look so innocent. Their eyes filled with such deep emotion, tears flowing down. You cannot imagine the same man outside, how he will look, how he will be at his shop, how he will behave when you go to the shop. The emotional part, the trusting part is finished in the temple, in the mosque, in the church. When he comes out, he is free of that part. And then he is as doubting as any scientist can be, as skeptical as possible. This is how we live a double life. This is a compromise. Jesus is not saying choose one against the other. If you choose one against the other part will be offended. And the offended part of your being will take revenge. And it takes very difficult. It makes life almost impossible to live. The more you try to live with one part, the more the other part disrupts all your planning, all your scheming. It comes up again and again. Then what to do? The way, the thing to be done is not to choose. The thing is to understand the whole contradiction of your being. Not choosing, but becoming choiceless. Not dropping one against the other. Because you cannot drop one aspect of a thing. You have a rupee. It has two aspects. You cannot drop one aspect. You cannot drop one side of it. You may not like the other side, but you have to carry both. If you want to carry one, you have to carry two. Then the whole rupee will be with you. Only thing that you can manage is the aspect you don't like, you can hide. The aspect you like, you can put it on the surface. That's all. That's how consciousness, unconscious is created. Conscious is that part, that horse that you like. And unconscious is that horse, that part that you don't like. Conscious is that which you have chosen. Unconscious is that against which you have chosen. These are the two churches, one you go and one you don't go. Otherwise, in a man like Buddha, conscious, unconscious, both disappear. Because he has not chosen, he has not chosen against. The whole coin drops, and only the whole coin can drop. Half can never be dropped. Doubt and trust are two aspects of the same coin. Just like cold and hot. They look contraries, but they belong together. They are polarities in one whole, just like negative and positive electricity, just like man and woman. They look opposites, but they are polarities of one phenomenon. You cannot drop negative electricity without dropping positive electricity. You cannot retain one and drop the other. If you do that, your being will be divided. The dropped, the repressed, the denied part will become the unconscious. The accepted, the welcomed part will become the conscious. And then there will be a continuous struggle between the conscious and the unconscious. But you are still mounting on two horses. The only way is to drop the whole. And the secret is not in dropping, because dropping can also become a choice. And this is the most complex and subtle thing. You can drop and choose dropping against not dropping. Then again there are two horses. No, this is to be done through understanding. Dropping is not the thing. Understanding is the thing. Understand the whole madness, what you have done to yourself, what you have allowed to happen to yourself, what type of contradictions you have been accumulating. Just see through the whole thing. Don't be for and against. Don't condemn, don't judge. Just look through the whole thing that you are. Don't hide, don't offend, don't judge this is good and that is bad. Don't evaluate it. Don't be a judge, but just an onlooker. Detached witness. Just see the whole that you are, whatsoever you are, whatsoever the mess you are in, just see it as it is. Suddenly, an understanding arises, which becomes the dropping. It is just like you have been trying to enter the wall, and suddenly you become aware that this is the wall and there is no door. Do you need to drop the effort now? You simply move. That movement is simple. It is not against and for. Simply you understand that this is absolutely useless, impossible. That is the meaning of Jesus. You simply look, it is impossible, you move. There is no choice on the part of the mind. You don't make any effort. Whenever there is understanding, it is effortless. And whenever something is effortless, it is beautiful because it is whole. Whenever there is effort, there is ugliness because it is always the part, never the whole. Effort means deeply that you are fighting against something. But why you are fighting? Because that which you are fighting still retains meaning for you. The enemy has also meaning, just like the friend. The opposed meaning, but he carries meaning. And have you ever thought, whenever your enemy dies, something in you dies immediately. You not only suffer from the death of your friends, you suffer from the death of your enemies. You cannot be the same. In India it happened, Muhammad Ali Jinnah and Mahatma Gandhi were the constant fighters against each other. Then Gandhi was murdered, and Jinnah is reported to have said that I feel very sad, something in me has died. Now, against whom Jinnah can fight? Against whom he can be the fighter? Against whom he can accept the challenge? The ego drops if the enemy is not there. You are constituted by your friends and by your enemies. You are a contradiction. Only one is whole who has no enemies and no friends, who has not chosen, who has no leanings for this or for that, who simply moves moment to moment with a choiceless awareness, and whatsoever life brings, he allows it. He floats. He is not swimming. He is not a fighter. He is in a let go. If you can understand this, then you will be able to understand the meaning of Jesus. It is impossible for a man to mount two horses and stretch two bows, and it is impossible for a servant to serve two masters. Otherwise, he will honor the one and offend the other. But the ordinary meaning will be, choose one master, don't choose two. Through choice you will never be whole. So it is not a question of choosing one master against the other, because you will still remain a slave. You cannot be free. Only choicelessness can give you freedom. Then you don't choose. You simply drop the whole effort. It drops by itself when you understand. Then you are the master. In India, we have been calling sannyasins Swami. Swami means master of oneself. It means who has dropped choosing. It means now he accepts no masters. And this is not an egoistic understanding. This is a deep understanding that if you choose between contraries, you are a victim. If you choose between the contraries, you will remain divided in the contraries. A sannyasin is not against this world and for that. A sannyasin is simply not against and for. He simply moves without friends and without enemies. There is a beautiful Zen story. One sannyasin was standing on a hilltop alone in the morning. Just like the hill, he was alone, standing unmoving. And three persons were passing by. They had come for a morning walk. They looked at this man, and they had different opinions what he is doing. One man said, "I know that monk. Sometimes his cow is lost. So he must be standing there and looking for the cow around the hill where it is." The second says, "But the way he is standing, he is not looking at all. He is not moving at all. His eyes seem to be almost fixed. That is not the way when a man looks for something. I think he must have come for a morning walk with some friend, and the friend is left behind. He is waiting for the friend to come." The third said, "That doesn't seem to be the reason, because whenever somebody waits, sometimes he looks behind whether the friend has arrived or not. but he never moves. He never looks behind. He is not waiting. That is not the posture of a waiting man. I think he is in prayer or meditating. They were so much divided and they became so excited about the explanations, what he is doing, they thought it is better to go and ask the man himself. It was hard to go up the hill, but they went. They reached to the man and the first asked, "Are you looking for your car? Because I know sometimes it is lost and you have to look." The man opened his eyes and said, "I don't, but I'm not looking for any cow or anything." Then he closed his eyes. The other man said, "Then I must be right. You are waiting for a friend who is left behind." The man opened his eyes and said, "I have no enemies and no friends. So how I can wait for anybody? I am alone. And I have not left anybody behind. Because there is nobody. I am alone, totally alone." Then the third said, "Then I must be absolutely right because there is no other possibility. I hope you are praying, meditating." The man laughed and he said, "You are the most foolish. Because I don't know anybody to whom I can pray. And I don't have any object to achieve. So how I can meditate?" And all the three simultaneously asked, "Then what are you doing?" The man said, "I'm just standing. I'm not doing anything at all. But this is what meditation is. And this is what sannyas is. Just being." Then you have a freedom. Freedom from friends, enemies. Freedom from possessions, non-possessions. Freedom from this world and that. Freedom from matter and mind. Freedom from all choices and divisions. Then the impossible is dropped and you become natural, you become Tao. Then you float. Then the impossible effort is gone, anxiety disappeared. Then you are no more in anguish. And when you are no more in anguish, bliss arises. Bliss is not something to be achieved. Only you have to create the capacity. When you are not in anguish, bliss happens. You have created the capacity, you have opened the door and the sun rays enter and fill you. As you are anxiety ridden, divided, mounting on two horses, trying to stretch two bows together, you are schizophrenic, you are ill, you are wavering. Or at the most, you have made a compromise and you have become normally neurotic. A normal being somehow carries the work. The neurosis does not come in the way, that's all. An adjusted citizen, that's all. But not worth. Even if you are adjusted citizen, a good citizen, a normal human being, no ecstasy will happen to you. You will remain sad. And whatsoever you achieve in this world will give you more sadness. Look at the people who have succeeded, who are ahead of you, who have reached the top, and you will see they are more sad than people who are not so successful because their hope is lost. One morning, Mullah Nasruddin was walking towards the market, very sad. And a friend asked, "What has happened?" Nasruddin said, "Don't ask me. I am so sad and so depressed that I could cry." But the friend insisted, "But what is the matter? We have never seen you so sad. You have been in so many difficulties, financial and others, but we have never seen you so sad and depressed. What is the matter? What has happened?" Mullah Nasruddin said, "2 weeks before, one of my uncles died and he left 100,000 rupees for me." The friend said, "Nasruddin, have you gone mad? If your uncle has left 100,000 rupees for you, you should be happy, not sad." Nasruddin says, "Yes, that's so. But last week my another uncle died and he has left 200,000 rupees for me." The man said, "Then you are completely out of your mind, because you should dance and rejoice and celebrate, because there is no reason to be unhappy. You are the happiest man in this town." Nasruddin said, "That I know, but I have no more uncles. That makes me sad." That's what happens when a man succeeds. Then you have no more uncles. Then suddenly, no hope. A man who is a failure still hopes, can hope. There are still uncles. The possibility exists. More success, more anxiety, because the success will bring you your neurosis up. The success will reveal you your schizophrenia. That's why in America more schizophrenia, more madness than in any other country, because America has succeeded in many ways. In a poor country, not so much madness. People can still hope. And when you can hope, nothing comes up. You go on running and running. When the goal is achieved, then you stand and you have to look at yourself and what mess you have created in your being, what chaos. You suddenly go out of your mind. You have been always out of your mind, but it is revealed when you succeed, because when there is no more to dream, you have to encounter yourself. Bliss is not possible. As you are, happiness is impossible. You can only hope for it and tolerate the pain, the suffering that you have brought to yourself. But bliss is possible. It has happened to a Jesus, to a Buddha. It can happen to you, but then you have to leave the impossible aside. Think of the natural, the possible, the easy. Don't think of the impossible, the difficult, the challenging. The ego likes always to do the impossible. It is a failure. It has to be a failure, but the ego likes to take the challenge of the impossible, because then you feel you are something. Against an impossible goal, you become a great fighter. And religion is simple, easy, natural. It is not riding on a horse at all. It is just a morning walk, not going anywhere. Just walking is the end. Not doing anything in particular, just enjoying the morning breeze, the sun, the words, just enjoying yourself. Enough for today.